Welcome, and thank you for standing by. I'd like to inform all parties that your lines have been placed in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. This call is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Tom Skinner. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Calvin, and thank you all for joining us today for this telebriefing on strengthening global health capacity, which is focused or highlighted in today's MMWR. With us is the director of the CDC, Dr. Tom Frieden, who will provide some opening remarks, and then we will get to your questions. Dr. Frieden.
Thank you very much, and thank you for joining us. Greetings, everyone, from a snowy and icy Atlanta. Thanks for joining us, and this, I think, is important. This is exciting news about some projects overseas that are making us safer here in the U.S. These are projects that have to do with what we refer to as global health security. That means keeping both the U.S. and the world safe and secure from infectious disease threats by three key measures of detecting, responding to, and preventing outbreaks as early and effectively as possible. Because of three important trends, we're actually at great and perhaps even greater risk from some diseases than we have been in the past. These three trends are, first, new and re-emerging pathogens, things like H7N9, plague. Second, drug-resistant organisms, whether that's drug-resistant tuberculosis or resistant organisms like carbapenem-resistant Enterobacter spreading in our hospitals. And third, sadly, intentionally created bioweapons, which since the anthrax attack a decade ago have only become easier, unfortunately, for isolated groups to potentially build. Emerging infections such as H7N9 in Asia and MERS coronavirus in the Middle East are two examples of infectious disease threats. The upcoming season, which will include the Lunar New Year starting in a few hours, the Winter Olympics, and later this year the World Cup, bring millions of families and fans together across long distances, and they also are another example of why it is so important that we address the ability to find and stop outbreaks where they occur before they spread. We are all connected by the food we eat, the air we breathe, and the water we drink, and therefore really a threat anywhere is a threat to health everywhere. The two articles in today's MMWR are on Uganda and Vietnam. Exactly a year ago, when we saw this confluence of factors and the need to accelerate progress, we decided to do pilots in two countries to see if we could make really rapid progress in these core areas of health protection. And we were pleasantly surprised and impressed by the amount of progress that was possible in less than a year. These are models of health security that can make the countries that they operate in, as well as ourselves in the U.S. and the whole world, safer. During about 6 months of intensive collaboration, CDC specialists worked with the ministries of health in both Uganda and Vietnam to do several core things. The first was to modernize diagnostic testing for high-risk pathogens. The second was to develop real-time information systems to track outbreaks faster. And the third was to improve emergency operations procedures so that these countries could respond to urgent situations faster and more effectively. Some of the improvements included improving clinicians' ability to report and track suspected dangerous cases by text message. That allowed us to immediately find out when there were suspected problems so that there could be rapid investigation. Also, to expand specimen referral and transportation systems. I was able to see this system in action in Uganda last year, and it was really quite impressive. There are clinical facilities operating all over the country which had previously been shipping specimens to the capital for testing of infants born to mothers who are HIV positive for what's called early infant diagnosis, and that's a blood spot heel stick specimen. They were able to use that infrastructure, which consists of doctors and other healthcare workers taking the specimen, motorcycle couriers traveling through very remote rural areas to pick up the specimens regularly, and overnight mail service to the capital, a high-quality standardized laboratory in the capital, and then results reported through what's called a GSM printer, something that was donated by Hewlett-Packard, so that the results were printed in the rural remote areas as soon as they came off the test equipment in the capital city within a day or two of collection. It's a terrific technology and cooperation, and is now being used not just for HIV, but also for cholera, for Ebola, for other viral hemorrhagic fevers, for drug-resistant tuberculosis, and for a series of other infections that are endemic and potentially epidemic in Uganda, including Zika virus, Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, hepatitis E, meningitis, yellow fever, and others. They've also been able to improve the speed of response. So there's a single case, the Emergency Operations Center can activate and they can track and improve the response locally. Similarly, in Vietnam, procedures for emergency response were strengthened. While progress is being made in places like Uganda and Vietnam, overall, we are woefully behind. The World Health Organization international health regulations required all countries in the world to be able to effectively find, report, stop, and prevent infectious disease threats. But as of the initial deadline of 2012, fewer than one in five countries in the world have even self-reported that they've met that level of preparedness. Today is the eve of Lunar New Year, which brings in the world's largest annual migration. There will be more than 3 billion transit trips in China during this time, including some travelers who may bring poultry for family meals during the celebration. This peak coincides with the surge of H7N9 avian influenza virus. The H7N9 strain jumped from birds to people for the first time last year, and China has reported more than 100 H7N9 infections this season. If the virus mutates to a form that spreads between people, and there's no evidence it's done that yet, but if it were to do that, that might well bring in the world's next deadly pandemic. China has closed several poultry markets and is monitoring new reports of H7N9, and I will say that we've worked very closely with the Chinese public health authorities, and they've been completely transparent through this process. As soon as the organism was isolated, they sequenced the genome, they shared that internationally, that allowed us to begin making diagnostic tests and a vaccine, and that kind of collaboration is exactly what we need to build on through global health security. Because of these kind of collaborations, we are safer, as are the countries where the enhancements are taking place. At CDC, we're working with the State Department and others to ensure that in the upcoming mass gatherings, whether they're the Olympic Games or the travelers and others are able to get up-to-date health information and track what's going on. We actually also work to establish a way of connecting different experts to those who may need input in real time on a variety of areas. And we're also collaborating with a way of trying to find outbreaks quickly by using mobile applications on smartphones, and that's being considered for development during some of the upcoming events. To sum up, today's reports outline very encouraging progress in two countries in making those countries and therefore their neighboring countries and the world safer against infectious disease threats. Keeping the U.S. and the world safe and secure from infectious disease threats is achieved by preventing, detecting, and responding to outbreaks as early and as effectively as possible. What we need to do in the coming months and years is to build on these achievements both in Uganda and Vietnam and in other countries so that countries have more stable, more productive, more vibrant societies protected from infectious disease threats, and we in the U.S. also are better protected. I'll be happy to answer any questions, and thank you very much.
Calvin, I think we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you, sir. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star 1 to ask the question. If you'd like to withdraw your question, you may press star 2. One moment for our first question. Our first question comes from Michael Smith with MedPage Today. Your line is open.
Good morning, Dr. Friedman. Thank you for taking this question. I actually have a couple of questions that don't bear directly on the two demonstration projects you're talking about, but do sort of cover some of the issues you raised. And if I can just, the first one is, you talked about using text messaging in Uganda, and mobile smartphone applications. In general, how widely do you see the sort of future use of these kind of applications, mobile phones, that sort of thing, for tracking, first identifying and tracking outbreaks?
I think this is mobile applications are going to be and already are very important. They're an early warning system. They're obviously not a way of confirming. So it's important to always keep in mind that they can sound the alarm, kind of like a smoke alarm or a fire alarm going off, but they can't investigate to see if it is truly an outbreak, nor can they control the outbreak. But it's very encouraging that we've seen the ability, for example, we had a very successful pilot a few years ago in Africa looking at malaria cases reported by text message, and we've been using text messaging for a variety of disease reporting. I think that's been very helpful. One of the technologies that's quite exciting in Africa is the use of these GSM printers, where instead of having to courier the results of a laboratory test, you can actually send it over the Internet, and it prints locally, securely. So there are a lot of ways in which the new technologies are making it easier, faster, more efficient for us to track and find and facilitate the investigation and control of outbreaks. It's important not to overpromise with technology. You still need a laboratory to be able to determine what the condition is, and you still need doctors and public health experts to go out there and control it. That's not going to be done by clicking or pushing a few buttons. But it's a tremendously powerful tool, a series of tools, and we're very encouraged that this is one of the things that makes global health security even closer to our reach, really. And similarly, we've been able to use some of the newer technology systems to ensure that information flows rapidly, that information collection can be done with PDAs or other handheld devices, so that you're actually eliminating the data entry procedure because you're doing that as you're collecting the data rather than in the old-fashioned ways, you know, picking up a questionnaire. And similarly, just as many countries in Africa have leapfrogged over some of the telecommunications advances and have a proportion of the population of 80% or higher with cell phones, there are some of the health facilities in Africa, including many supported by PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, that have electronic health records that can be used to provide, extract, and extract information.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Friedman. The other question I had, you mentioned the Olympics as one of these mass events along with the Lunar New Year in the Orient. I'm interested in what sorts of things you're worried about in Sochi. In particular, the Russian Federation and the region has rates of TB incidents along the lines of 90 to 120 odd per 100,000 population. At least they did in 2012. Is TB a risk? What are the infectious disease risks? What are the disease risks in general in Sochi?
Thanks. I'll answer this question, and I think we'll have to go on to the next questioner. There are things that travelers can do. Make sure immunizations are up to date. Pack smart, including a travel health kit. See about health travel health insurance. One of the things that we always are concerned about is crowd safety and safe transportation and doing simple, healthy personal habits like wearing seat belts and having good hand hygiene. There are a variety of health safety information specific to the Olympics on our website, and this is one of the things that we do in collaboration with any mass gathering. In terms of your question specifically about tuberculosis, many countries in the world have high rates of tuberculosis, and we've seen lots of drug resistance as well. Generally, catching tuberculosis requires prolonged direct contact with someone who has not been effectively treated. So it's not one of the things that we generally see as high up on the risk level, but certainly if people have contact with someone for a prolonged period of time with untreated or ineffectively treated tuberculosis, it's something that we would investigate.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, please press star 1 if you would like to ask the question. Our next question comes from Michelle Castillo with CBS News. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering if you could speak more about the H7 and 9 threat in China and whether or not there's fears that it will cross over to the U.S.
So we know that we've already had our first case and death from H5 in Canada earlier this year in a resident from Beijing. we also know that H7 and 9 has many concerning characteristics. The fact that it doesn't make birds sick, so we can't cull the flocks. Just one moment, please. The fact that it has a high case fatality rate, the fact that it spreads readily from poultry to people, it's well adapted to that. What's reassuring is that although it is continuing to mutate and we're tracking the genetic sequence of H7N9, it has not mutated in ways that would allow it to spread from person to person. And until and unless it does that, it does not, we believe, present a risk of a pandemic of widespread transmission. So while we might see an isolated case in a traveler, we would be unlikely to see a case widespread transmission unless it develops that mutation. And we don't have a crystal ball. I can't say whether that mutation will occur tomorrow, in 10 years, or never. What we can do and what we are doing is make sure that we're tracking it intensively and working very actively on how we would confront that if it were to occur so we could limit in any way possible the harm it would do.
Thank you.
And I'm showing no further questions at this time.
Great. So I just want to reiterate that global health security is about keeping the U.S. and the world safe and secure from infectious disease threats. It's about preventing, detecting, and responding to outbreaks as early and effectively as possible, because we are all actually connected by the food we eat, the air we breathe, and the water we drink. And that's why a health threat anywhere is a threat to health everywhere. We're making a lot of progress, and the reports in today's MMWR from Uganda in particular and also Vietnam show how much progress can be made using new technologies and training and a focused approach in just a few months. But there are still many countries and many parts of many countries that are not adequately protected, and we look forward to making much more progress in the months and years to come, and we thank all of you for joining us.
Calvin, this concludes our telebriefing. I want to encourage reporters who have follow-up questions. Since the CDC press office is closed, you won't be able to call our office, but you can certainly email the CDC press office if you have follow-up questions, and the email address is media@cdc.gov, and we'll be happy to help you assist you with further information. Thanks again for joining us. This concludes our call.